Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 3, Text 29. Janmate maya sopapo. Janmate maya sopapo. Mavidyan madhusudana. Mavidyan madhusudana. Samudvijay bhavadeto. Kamsaraham adiradi. Janmate maya sopapo. Mavijam marusudana. Samudvijay bhavadeto. Kamsaraham adiradi. Others. Vaishnavis? Okay, so we're just going with the word. Janma, the birth. Te, of your lordship. Mai, in my womb. Aso, that Kamsa. Papa, extremely sinful. Ma vidya, maybe unable to understand. Madhusudana, O Madhusudana, Samudvijay, I am full of anxiety. Bhavadheto, because of your appearance. Kamsat, because of Kamsa, with whom I have had such bad experience. Aham, I, Adiradi, have become more and more anxious. Translation. And purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Madhusudana, because of your appearance, I am becoming more and more anxious in fear of Kamsa. Therefore, please arrange for that sinful Kamsa to be unable to understand that you have taken birth from my womb. Purport. Devaki addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Madhusudana. She was aware that the Lord had killed many demons like Madhu, who were hundreds and thousands of times more powerful than Kamsa. Yet, because of affection for the transcendental child, she believed that Kamsa could kill him. Instead of thinking of the unlimited power of the Lord, she thought of the Lord with affection, and therefore she requested the transcendental child to disappear. Okay, so start off with a question. Those of you who are standing in the back there, are you comfortable? I mean, because we got space up here. You want to just come up and sit down? Come up and sit down. There's mats left, and I mean, it's up to you. Okay, but there is room up here, and we got mats left. And the second thing is a request. Could I get one of those books back? Because I'll need it to kind of explain from. I was a little too generous there. Thank you. And you can maybe just look on with your neighbor there. Okay, so I'm going to try to make sense of this for everybody. So what's happening here is that we're hearing a devotee of Krishna speaking. She happens to be in this particular situation, acting as the mother of Krishna, the mother of God. And in order to, I'm going to really kind of back up to help you get a handle on the whole thing, and that's why I distributed these books here, because this, the cover of this book is like our picture of reality, and I'm going to try to kind of present some of the basic ideas, so hopefully by the end of this talk you'll have kind of like a, you know, like a basic understanding of the whole picture of reality, or, you know. So anyway, so here on this cover here you see that there's the blue, and there's that the red kind of effulgence, and then there's a picture inside there. So the basic idea here is what's being shown. Oh, well, and actually below the reddish effulgence, there's another little circle there, okay, with a bunch of other smaller circles. Okay, so the basic idea here is this. That this is showing that both the spiritual and the material worlds. The material world is that picture on the little circle underneath the red effulgence. Can everybody got that one? Can you see it? Okay. So basically what's being shown there is that beyond the material universe or universes, you know, as whichever way as you have it, there is a spiritual region. And that's the bluish. That's the whole blue cover, basically. And in that spiritual sky, you could call it, there are planets, those other circles there that are kind of not the big red one within the big red one, but those are representing spiritual planets. So the idea is that beyond this material universe, there's a spiritual sky, for, you know, just to make it, keep it a simple way to refer to it. And in that spiritual sky, there are spiritual planets. And there's one central most important spiritual planet. That's the one that's shown here in the middle of the front cover. It's called Goloka Vrindavan. Okay? And these other spiritual planets are called Vaikuntha planets, and on each one of those spiritual planets, well, actually, I'll back up Tina a little bit. In this main spiritual planet, that's where God lives. You know, and the idea is God's a person. He's got a name. He's got form. He's got qualities. He's got activities. He has a lot of associates, and basically what's going on there in his planet, in the spiritual world, is he's just engaging in reciprocal loving relationships with his associates. That's what he does. He just enjoys. You know, it's just like, if you can imagine, like a really happy family. If there is such a thing here in the material world. But that's the basic idea. He's in the spiritual world, and it's eternal. You know, his body is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge, and he's just engaging in these reciprocal loving relationships with his associates. A similar sort of a thing is going on these other planets, these other spiritual planets here, the ones I referred to as Vaikuntha planets, but in a more sort of a formal setting. Okay, but they're also the same basic idea there, that, you know, they're all eternal and like that. So, next idea is that originally all of us were in the spiritual world. Okay? When I say all of us, I'm not referring to us meaning like in these bodies, because obviously these bodies are mortal. They're temporary. You know, they're born at a certain time. They exist for a certain amount of time, and then you die, and they just either get buried or burned or whatever. But the idea is, the belief is that inside the body there is a soul, and the soul is eternal. It's eternal both ways. It's eternal from, you know, when after you die, the soul exists eternally after that. But our idea, the Vedic idea, is that the soul exists eternally before this body. You see, and that's who we really are. We're souls in a material body. And originally, we were in the spiritual world with Krishna. Krishna's a name for God. And he has other names, but Krishna is the principal name, let's say. So originally we're in the spiritual world with Krishna, God, and we were participating in these reciprocal loving relationships. Now, the next obvious question would be, well, if that's the case, how did we wind up here? Because we could see that this is where we are now is something kind of like obviously inferior. It's when, you know. Well, the philosophy is that in order for there to be a reciprocal loving relationship, there has to be, or a loving relationship, there has to be free will. There has to be free will. And so we're told that the living entities, all of us, all have free will, a certain amount of free will. And when the soul properly uses its free will, it remains in the spiritual world, in enjoying, participating in those reciprocal loving relationships with Krishna, which are going on like right now as we speak, okay? But if any given soul, any particular soul at any point in time decides that to not properly use, you know, decides to try to be happy or enjoy life, not living in compliance or in, you know, cooperation with the desires of Krishna or God, and we're all free to do that. That's what the free will, you know, means. Then, okay, that's allowed. But then you can no longer remain in the spiritual world. Just like, to give an analogy, just like here in America, you know, everybody is born a free citizen. Even if your parents are criminals, you know, you're born in jail. You're still a free citizen. And then it's up to you. You know, if you choose to live your life in compliance or in, you know, submission, cooperation with the laws of the government, you remain a free citizen. But if anybody at any given point in time decides, well, you know what, I think I'm going to try to do things my way, differently. I'm not so concerned about the laws of the government or whatever. Basically, you know, I'll live in rebellion or in defiance to the will of the government. You're free to do that. But then you're going to have to accept the consequences, which is most likely you'll be, you know, caught doing something wrong. You'll be apprehended. You'll be tried and sentenced, and, you know, you'll wind up in prison. You see, so you lose your freedom. So that's the idea, that we are all, originally we started off in the spiritual world, and some souls, most souls are still in the spiritual world, but a certain percentage of souls have decided to misuse their free will. And we're wound up here in the material world. You see, we're actually in that category. So the idea is not to stay here in this material world, but to go back to the spiritual world. Just like the idea is, if somebody, once again, theoretically speaking, say somebody, you know, makes the mistake of deciding to try to be happy, living in rebellion or in defiance to the will of the government, then the hope is that, well, that person, you know, is going to, once they're in prison and they experience what it's like living in prison, how much inferior it is to being, how less, much less pleasurable it is than being a free citizen, hopefully they're going to understand that, well, I don't want to stay here. I think it's probably a better idea for me to just, you know, live in compliance to the will of the government and get out of here. So that's the same idea, that we should, you know, we're here in this material world, and the idea is we want to go back to the spiritual world where we originally came from. So that's the basic idea. Here in this, of course, that is not only what we should want, it makes sense, but that's very much what Krishna or God wants. He does not want to see us suffering here in the material world. And we are suffering here in the material world. I mean, not everybody's suffering to the same degree, to the same intensity, but on the whole, we're all suffering. We're all suffering in the sense that no matter who you are, you're forced to get old. Generally, their health deteriorates in the process of getting old, and then you got to die. So, even if you're have really what we call good karma, if you're kind of fortunate, and obviously some people are materially doing a lot better than others. Even the people who are doing the best materially have to deal with those things: getting old, getting sick, dying. There's nobody that's exempt from that. Even your Jack LaLanne's, I don't know, some of you probably never heard of him, but our teacher there knows who Jack LaLanne was. Amazing, enjoyed amazing good health for 96 years, and he was a happy guy. But unfortunately, time ran out and he had to pass away. And, we can mention so many other names of people who really had seemed like fabulous lives here in the material world. But, time, like it says, time and tide wait for no man. Time was up and you got to go. So we should want to get out of this material world and go back to the spiritual world. And that's very much what Krishna wants. Krishna, God, wants us to be back in the spiritual world. Once again, going back to that analogy I gave in the beginning. Well, I didn't mention it. But we're like Krishna. We're like God's spiritual offspring. I kind of touched upon it, but I didn't elaborate upon it fully. We're like his spiritual offspring. It really is, one big happy family in the spiritual world. So just like if you can think of that analogy in the material world, imagine you have a family, a mother, a father, and a lot of children, big family, very happy family. So the mother and the father love all the children. They love all the children, you see? And they really want the children to stay within the family and, enjoy that family situation. And if some of the children or one of the children goes off and, decides to try to do a different thing with their life and as a result they make mistakes and they're suffering, it's not like the mother or father feeling, serves you right. I told you so. No, they're not like that. The whole time they're feeling like, okay, well, now just come back. At every point in time, at every moment, the mother and father are the well-wishers, and they're desiring that child come back. And okay, just whatever you've done, it's done. Now come back to the family. So that's Krishna's mood. He wants the living entities. God wants us to come back to the spiritual world way more than we even want to go there, you see, because that's it's his compassion, it's his love, it's eternally existing for each living entity, each of his parts and parcels or spiritual offspring. Okay, so that's the basic picture of reality here. I probably left a lot of things out, but that's an attempt to present the basic picture of reality. And where do I want to go from there? And that's the purpose, in a nutshell, the human form of life, which is basically saying the same thing. In other words, the whole purpose of this human form of life, a human body, human life, is a chance to do this. It's a chance to understand all these different things that I was just kind of referring to. It's a chance to understand that we're something more than just this material body, that we're actually eternal spiritual beings. It's a chance to understand that we have an eternal spiritual relationship with God, who's the supreme spiritual being. It's a chance to act upon that knowledge. And when you act upon that knowledge, you proportionately get what we use the word realization or understanding, that is the actual case. That's the fact. That's the truth. You see? So it's an opportunity. And then if we fully act upon that knowledge and successfully, then at the end of this lifetime, what happens is when you die, your soul, this is once again our understanding, your soul will not be obliged to enter into another material body again, but your soul will return to the spiritual world. In other words, you'll go back to the spiritual world, where you'll live eternally with Krishna, or God, in either Goloka Vrindavan, the central, the main spiritual planet, or one of these, let's say, subordinate or subsidiary spiritual planets. And that's perfection. And that's actually the goal of the human form of life. That's what it's all about. You see? And that's why human life is very special, because living entities or creatures other than human beings, obviously they don't have that facility. You know, we're not trying to say that animals or creatures less than human beings don't have any intelligence. No, they obviously do. But this is a privilege. This is the human form of life is meant for this opportunity, to take advantage of this opportunity. And yeah, so that's what's going on here. Here in today's verse, we're hearing a devotee of Krishna who's actually has the privilege of playing the role of Krishna's mother in his earthly pastimes, which brings us to another point. Krishna is proactive. It's not like he's just sitting there in the spiritual world and kind of enjoying himself, all these reciprocal loving relationships, and kind of thinking, well, yeah, it would be nice if these living entities would come back. No, he's way more emotionally involved than that. He's way more invested than that. Krishna does all sorts of things to help us come back. So unlike, say, the President of the United States, say somebody messes up and they wind up in jail, he doesn't do all sorts of things. I mean, he might have maybe spend 1 second of his day thinking like, wow, it's a shame all these people are in prison. But he's not making all sorts of arrangements and doing all sorts of things to try to rehabilitate the criminals. That's not like high on his list of priorities, if you follow the analogy. But it's very high on the list of Krishna's priorities to get us back to the spiritual world. To that end, Krishna comes himself periodically. You know, God actually descends from the spiritual world into the material world specifically for that purpose, to try to help the souls who have misused their free will see the light, so to speak, and change their attitude and develop a desire to go back to the spiritual world. He comes himself. He sends representatives. You know, when he doesn't come himself personally, he'll empower one of his associates, because as I mentioned, he has many associates in the spiritual world, unlimited actually. He'll empower an associate to enter into the material world for the same purpose, to, you know, help revive the awareness among the souls of who they really are and what, you know, what their real situation is. He leaves within human society instructions. This is the book I passed around, is one of our scriptures. It's basically a literature that gives information along the lines of, you know, what we're talking about, and has those instructions on how we should conduct our lives in order to elevate ourselves spiritually. So, you know, in all these different ways, Krishna is reaching out in an attempt to help us, you know, get out of this material world, get out of we refer to as samsara, the cycle of birth and death, and go back to live with him eternally in the spiritual world. And that's his really, I wouldn't say top priority, but it's definitely among his top priorities, to try to get all the souls who have left the spiritual world back to the spiritual world, simply because out of his love, you know, for them, and compassion. So let's see what time it is. It's about 8:05. I'm going to stop there because I'm hoping that we got some questions. And generally, this class is supposed to end at about 8:15. So if I stop now, and if we do have some questions, it'll give me enough time to answer them. So first of all, let me ask you a question. Did it make sense? Did you kind of get a... Okay, so it made sense what I was saying. I mean, you can understand the picture. Okay. All right. So do you have any questions? Yeah, please.
We have a microphone.
Yeah, the microphone's coming. Thank you. Because I'm also a little bit hard of hearing, so that was a struggle. Okay, good.
So does everyone go? So, like,
you
got to
talk right into that thing. Yeah.
Okay.
You got it. There you go.
Does everyone go to the planet where Krishna is on, or one of the other planets? what you have to do to get there.
Yeah, when you achieve spiritual perfection, those when you become what we, with our expressions, when you become a pure devotee, you see, when you live your life in such a way that it becomes obvious to Krishna or God that you have no other desire than to just, love and serve Him, that you're not interested in any of the benefits, so-called benefits this material world has to offer, that you've kind of seen through the whole thing and you understand what really material life is all about, and you're really sincerely wanting to just, once again, be with Him and serve Him and like that, then yeah, you go back to one of those spiritual planets. You go back to either that the main one in the middle there or one of those other ones, and you revive your original relationship with Krishna, because as I mentioned, we start off there, and due to misuse of our free will, we come here. So when you become purified or spiritually perfect, you go back and you once again engage in your original relationship with Krishna or God. Does that answer the question? Yeah. Got to talk right into that thing.
Okay. What are the differences in roles of like devotees between men and women?
The differences in role between men and women?
As pure devotees?
Zero. I mean, here in material world, there's kind of a more of a difference, but in the spiritual world, it's just the body, the form you have in the spiritual world is just to facilitate the desire, the way in which you want to love Krishna. You are awarded a form. It could be a male form, it could be a female form, it could be, actually, to be honest with you, this material world, it's stated, is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So it's not just like there's human-like beings in the spiritual world, Krishna and a bunch of like people, like look kind of like him, or like look like human beings. There's cows, there's everything. I mean, you name it. There's all. This world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So everything that's here is there. So in other words, you can service to Krishna is being conducted not just through the medium of a human-like body, but even less than human bodies. But it's all on what we refer to as the transcendental platform. So. Yeah, the main thing there is the distinction is just that according to your desire, your way and the way in which you want to serve Krishna or love Krishna, you get a form that will correspond and facilitate your desire to do that. Does that kind of make sense? Or not really? Keep going.
The form, it's like in like your past life, the life of like how much you wanted to be devoted would determine like what your form was in your next determine what your form was in the next life to then be devoted.
I'm missing it. Got to talk right into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like I noticed like there were like different roles in the service.
Yeah.
Like between the women and the men. So
you're talking about here in this world now.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. So is it like it's determined before you're born? Is that what you're saying? And like into the material world?
Run it by me one more time. As I said, I'm a little hard to hear.
The role of like you were talking about how you want to show your devotion, is that determined before you're born into the material world?
Each one of us in this form. Well, okay, so this form, it comes about as a bunch of different reasons. One, karma. Knows we receive a form in this lifetime according to our karma, which means the results of our past activities. Okay? That's one consideration. Another consideration is that you could have been serving Krishna previously in a previous lifetime, in which case you'll get a body, you'll receive a body which is a result of your karma and simultaneously will give you the opportunity to take up from where you left off in your service from your past lifetime. Because this is an idea I didn't introduce previously, but I'll introduce it now, that whatever, this can be a multiple life program. In other words, whatever advancement you make in spiritual life, say you don't become 100% we use the expression Krishna conscious in this lifetime. Say you become 67% Krishna conscious. What will happen is, you'll at the time of death, your soul will be transferred to another human body, because if you, anybody who uses their human form of body to try to elevate themselves spiritually is guaranteed at least another human body in their next lifetime. So you'll get another human body, and what will happen is at some point, especially if you made it to 67%, at some point pretty early in that next human body you receive, you're going to come in contact with this again. You know, you'll be attracted to it, or you might be born into a family that practices it, or you will come in contact with this again, and at that point you will start from where you left off. You just start off from 67%, and it's just continuous, this continuity. See, so that could be a factor in determining the body you get. Does that answer your question yet?
It does, thank you.
Okay.
So, if you are, if your next form is an animal body, is it possible for you to make it to the spiritual world, or do you have to wait until the next form in that type of body?
Yeah, generally, if you're in a lower or less than a human form, okay, you got to wait. That's, you know, generally, that's the general program. That what happens is, say you, as a human being, you misuse your free will, and you're demoted into the lower species of life, and that's what it is. It's a demotion. Say you take birth as a worm in a stool or something like that, okay? How it works is this, that mechanically you're going to be promoted from one species to the next, and as the soul, after it finishes being the worm, it goes to a next higher species and the next, up, 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 until you finally come back to the human form of life again, and then you get another chance, okay? That's the general process. However, there are some rare instances where animals have been able to get some sort of special dispensation and, get spiritual blessings or benedictions even while in, you know, the soul is in that animal form of life. It's the exception rather than the rule. It's a rare exception rather than the rule. Because generally, animal form of life is a punishment, and you just gotta, just like when you go to jail, generally, if somebody's, you know, in jail for 10 years because of armed robbery or something like that, they gotta serve their sentence. And then when they get out, then they get another chance to be a free citizen. But sometimes something might happen. They might, you know, get some sort of presidential pardon or something like that, you know. But you can't, generally speaking, you serve your sentence. So that's the idea.
So if you're demoted to an animal and then you live your animal life and you, are you back to a human, or is it just determined on what you do during that animal life? Or
no karma for animals. It's just, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just like next time you get another shot,
yeah,
like another
exactly.
Shot, and then, okay.
Yeah. Okay. For instance, when a tiger is in the jungle and it pounces upon some deer or something like that, some wild deer, it doesn't get bad karma for that. That's just what tigers do. You know, those animals are so much governed by their instinctual drives, they're not held responsible for their behavior. There's no bad karma or good karma for animals.
Yeah.
They're just burning up. Actually, when the soul is in the animal, the lower species of life, it's just burning up its bad karma until it, you know, completely burns it up, and then it comes back to the human form of life again.
Okay.
Yeah, that answered it? All girls so far. All right.
So I know a little bit, like I've heard a little bit about Hinduism.
Please put that, I'm actually a little bit harder
yeah.
Here. You've got to put that
Sorry.
Thing right in front of your mouth and speak as loud as you can.
Is
Go.
This better? So I know that in Hinduism they worship a lot of, like they have a lot of gods. And I was just wondering why you guys focus on Krishna.
Okay, let me see if I got it. You're saying Hindus have a lot of gods? Was that, why do we just focus on Krishna?
That's my understanding of Hinduism,
okay.
Is that they worship a lot of other gods.
Right. Well, they do. And our claim would be that they do that without the proper understanding. It's not, you know, because they're not understanding things properly. We, to try to make it clear, we do believe in a hierarchy of beings. See, we're human beings, okay, and we just talked about how lower than human beings, they're animals, they're souls in animal bodies. And it's also described in the Vedic literature that there are souls in bodies that are higher than human bodies, but they're not spiritual bodies, or they're not They're not on the level of God, you see? And they're what's called devas. Have you ever heard that word? Demigods? Is that, you've heard that? Yeah. Yeah, so that's what's going on in Hindu society, that there are people, due to a misunderstanding, they're worshiping these demigods who are actually just souls like us, or you know, in a higher quality material body. They're worshiping them mistakenly as if they were on the same level as the supreme being. So that's incorrect. There is that hierarchy of beings, okay, but they are not anywhere near on the same level as Vishnu or Krishna, who is the original supreme personality of Godhead, the original supreme being. So that's a mistake. The analogy that our spiritual master would give is just like in a government. Sometimes people, you know, if they know who's the minister of power and water, or they know who's the minister of the, they might bribe a government minister for the purpose of getting some, you know, benefit. Like you might know that they're going to build a railway line, and you have property that they have to go through. So you make a deal. You know, you flatter this particular minister so that he gives you a nice price on your land or something. It's what's referred to as a vidhi purvakam, unbona fide worship. Basically, the idea is that it's kind of that people do that because they want material benefits, but it's not actually, they're missing the point. The real point is not to worship these materially empowered beings to improve our situation here in the material world. The real intelligent thing to do is to try to worship the supreme being for the purpose of getting out of the cycle of birth and death and being promoted back to the spiritual world. Does that answer your question? Yeah, it does. Okay. Another question. Oh, finally a guy. Okay, here we go.
Oh, sorry. Could you talk a little bit about like the room that we're in and stuff like
sure.
that? For instance, like who's next to you or and stuff like that, I guess.
Okay. So this is our temple room, and this is where we do a lot of our activities of worship. Just here on my left is a what's called a Vyasasana. It's a seat of like an honorific kind of a seat of honor for honoring our spiritual master, who we accept as being an external manifestation of the supreme person, Krishna. Remember I mentioned how Krishna sometimes comes himself into the material world. He descends into the material world to save us, like to try to help us get back to the spiritual world. And sometimes he empowers one of his associates. So that's basically our understanding of the spiritual master, that he's either somebody who's descended from the spiritual world on a mission, or he's somebody who's here in the material world but is being elevated to the position of an empowered representative. He's been enlightened by Krishna so that he can execute that service of preaching, disseminating these teachings to people who need them, don't understand them. So he's shown special honor because of that, his elevated position. Okay, on the altar there's those different forms, and the idea, those are actually deity forms of Krishna, and the idea behind those is this, that actually we relate to those forms as if Krishna is personally present. And the understanding, immediately when you hear that, probably the thing shoots up in your mind, uh-oh, idol worship. It's a little bit different, and I'll try to explain the differences. One is that we didn't come up with this idea. You know, our idea is that, see, this knowledge, everything I'm telling you, this is not something that somebody who was really smart 5,000 years ago cooked up in their brain, and then they just, decided, let's proliferate these ideas, and make a religion out of it. That's not our understanding of how this all came about. Our understanding is that all this information, hopefully, that I've given you up till this point, it's all coming down originally from Krishna or God. It's coming, it's so this idea of worshiping these forms as being Krishna, non-different from Krishna, that's also something, along with the rest of the philosophy, that's coming down from originally Krishna himself and is being introduced into human society. And the analogy that's given to help us understand this idea is that just imagine you have a, you know, post office, okay? Here in Los Angeles, there's probably a couple central post offices. I know there's one out by the airport, and there's probably one downtown. So say today I have to mail a letter, okay? And I have to take that letter all the way down to the post office by LAX or all the way downtown. I could do it, but it's not very convenient. You know, it's a lot. I mean, that's a long, it's 8 miles down to the airport or 8 miles downtown. It's a long way to travel just to mail a letter, you see? So the post office, just to make it convenient for the citizens, what it does is it puts post office boxes all around the city. See, so rather than me having to go 8 miles to mail that letter at the central post office, I can just go across the street to the corner there, you know, about 2 minutes walk, and just pop that letter in the post office box, and it's as good as if I took it to the central post office, you see? So in the same way, in order to make it convenient, you know, in order to kind of like help the living entities who are kind of, you know, making some sort of an attempt to reestablish their relationship with him again, Krishna appears. You know, he agrees, he advents, he appears in this deity form to accept our service, to accept our worship. It's actually, you know, a way in which he's trying to make it easier for us. He's trying to work with us, so to speak. So that's the idea. That, you know, so we relate to these forms as if that was Krishna was personally there. We cook offerings for them. You know, we actually offer our food to the deities. We will offer prayers to the deities, etc. We dress them. We, you know, if you were to come tomorrow, you wouldn't see them wearing the same clothing, the same outfits. They'd be changed. The flowers would be different. The clothing would be different. You see. So we do like that. We offer render varieties of services to the deity form with the understanding that that's Krishna right there. You see? Now, you might say, well, I mean, that's pretty far out. Well, it is pretty far out. And another idea is this, that, you know, it's one thing, in Krishna consciousness, we have a lot of things where, like, it's visible, but not manifest. I'll explain that. So, like, you know, the deity form is visible to everybody. Anybody can walk in this room and see the deities, but it's not until you become, when you start surrendering, when you actually, like, you know, take these teachings seriously and really start sincerely putting them into practice in your life, then the form of the deity becomes more than just visible to you. It becomes manifest. And as you actually, Krishna reveals how that is the case. He reveals to you. You actually start experiencing how, yeah, Krishna's present in his deity form, or Krishna's present in his name, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You see? But that's not something, that's something that comes as you make advancement in your spiritual realization. Initially, we just have to accept it, you know, and then just try to, you know, act upon it, and then the realization will, or the understanding will, you know, come as we, our consciousness becomes elevated. That's our temple president there. He'd like to make a comment or ask a question. Yeah.
We should also say that Krishna was actually present thousands of years ago. People actually saw him. So when we have the form of Krishna on the altar, it's depicted by actual persons that saw him. Not everyone knew that Krishna was God, but everyone knew about Krishna and who Krishna was. So when we make the deity form here, it's how Krishna actually looked. And there's also an understanding that Krishna is everything and everywhere. Every atom, whatever, every particle in this material world is Krishna because it's part of Krishna. Krishna is the creator of everything, anything that you can see. So this particular form here now has been obviously carved out in the image of Krishna, and because Krishna is everywhere and everything, we pray to him and ask him to come to allow us to worship him in this particular form. And the purpose of that worship is that when you're here in this world and you worship Krishna according to our scripture, that when you leave this planet and you go back to where Krishna lives, you know exactly how to associate with him. In other words, if you want to see the President of the United States, It's not like you're going to go up to him and say, hey, man, how are you? Before you actually see him, you'll be taught how to speak to him. For instance, I met Ronald Reagan, and before I went to him in his office, in his chamber, I was told by security how to address him, what he likes, where I should sit, how I should speak to him. No slang, they told me. Don't use any slang. Be proper, be gentle, and be very, very honest with him in your communication. So in the same way, we have the deity form. We're trained here how to properly worship God as if you were in the spiritual world. If you actually met God today, would you know what to tell him? Would any of you know what to say to him? How would you address him? You know, would you ask him, we want some water, or what would you like to eat? Well, what kind of food do you want? So the purpose of us worshiping the deity is to learn, according to our scripture, and this has been brought down by Krishna himself through his representative in the form of a spiritual master. And this goes back thousands of years. Prabhupada is simply in a chain of disciplic succession. And this disciplic succession goes back over 5,000 years ago. So anything that Bhrigu was telling you, it's not a concoction. It's actually been handed down from guru to disciple. And then from the guru to disciple, guru to disciple. This goes down through centuries, thousands of years. Srila Prabhupada was in a particular line called the Gaudiya Vaishnava. And the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are people, devotees of Krishna, that fully surrendered, pure devotee. And this is what Srila Prabhupada represents. So anything we're telling you today is not something that we thought up, but it's actually in our scripture. People actually saw Krishna. And from that point, it's been handed down.
Thank you very much. That was a very nice addition, and hopefully it helped clarify things even further. We're supposed to end this class right around now, so we should do that. And if anybody has any further questions, I'm going to sit right here. Just come on up. We can talk. I've got all the time in the world. So once again, thank you so much for coming, and I hope that you enjoyed the class and got something out of it, helped you understand a bit better what we're all about. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Oh, if everybody could just stick those books back in the box there, that would be great. Thank you. Yeah, go for it.
So I was just kind of curious if you have any time for kind of your story.